Well, it's now less than 24 hours until polling day comes around in this federal election. It's been a divisive and at times toxic campaign. Let's just take a second to remind ourselves.
Election campaigns are not coronation tours.
The choice for Australia to be a leader in the world is ours to make.
Bill Shorten and his team, they tried to get Clive Palmer's preferences.
Rubbish.
I think the only thing... Well, I'm sorry,
rubbish.
Bill.
All I'm asking you is for a little respect
when you just come a little bit, hey, baby, just a little. And I come on this all the time and I'm sick of it.
I've had Fraser Anning, I've had Brian Burston. I've had a whole list of them, David Alford, you name them. Where are they now?
That is such a bubble question. I'm just going to leave that one in the bubble.
The Labor Party, Labor Party.
What is the cost of the emissions reductions policies? And we still haven't got the answers.
No, I don't believe gay people, because they're gay, will go to hell. I'm asking please,
heaven help my heart. Aren't they fantastic? How good's mum? When they counted us, we're far from the
shallow now. My mum has taught me that what matters in life isn't how rich you are or how poor you are. It's not what religion you worship. Mum taught me it doesn't matter about your gender. It matters how hard you work.
I found it very disappointing that without even prompting, he sought to try and politicise this. People's faith are people's faith, and you know, I'm not running for Pope, I'm running for Prime Minister.
And the power is in your hands. Stop the cuts, vote for change, vote Labor.
The hunger for Australia and achieving the aspirations of Australia, it is burning deep within me. And I'm asking Australians to let me to get on with that job.
And it burns, 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 the ring of fire.
The sounds of the 2019 election campaign. Thanks to Marina Freire for that montage. Well, how is it all going to play out at the ballot box tomorrow? I'm joined now by Michelle Grattan, Chief Political Correspondent with The Conversation, Karen Middleton, Saturday Paper's Chief Political Correspondent, and Shane Wright, Senior Economics Correspondent for The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. Welcome, all of you, to breakfast.
Morning, Hi, friend.
Hi, friend.
I think we must start with Bob Hawke and his legacy today. Michelle, you were there in the press gallery, you saw Bob Hawke arrive, and you were there through his prime ministership for all of the Hawke years. Tell us a little about your thoughts of this man up close, your reflections of him and the Hawke years.
Well, so much has been said about how impressive a leader he was, and I think that's all accurate. One point, though, that perhaps hasn't been so much emphasised is how effective he was in managing the Labor Party, because if you remember when he came to power, it was with policies that were very different than the ones that he had to implement as Australia needed to change and the economy needed to open. And that required convincing the Labor Party, the caucus, the wider organisation that it needed to take a different attitude on economic questions. The Labor Party then was a different and more difficult beast to manage than it is today, and he did that so successfully.
Karen, you too were there in the press gallery for some of the Hawke years and the transition to the Hawke-Keating government. What's your reflections on Bob Hawke?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. He was a consensus leader. I think we look back on that time as a period which was absent the hyper-partisan nature of politics now. There was more preparedness to consider ideas and implement them and join together, I think, across the divide to do that, and not the sense that one party or another owned particular ideas. If it was a good idea, parties would fight for it, and that's the sort of leader that Bob Hawke was, I think, and not someone who would, I mean, while he was absolutely Labor to his bootstraps, but not someone who would just dismiss an idea because it belonged to the other side.
Shane, as an economics correspondent, it must be hard for you to wrap your head around economic reforms being passed in the parliament, such as floating the dollar, deregulating the banks, taking controls off interest rates, and these are major, major changes to our economy.
Yeah, you're into the space, which is the Australian economy, BH before Hawke and then after Hawke, because 83 election is where the Australian economy becomes mature. It develops and steps onto the world stage. It adapts, and in some cases is world leading in the reforms that we've seen. And that
have we lost that capacity in the Australian Parliament, do you think, to make those reforms?
The reforms are different because we don't have to make huge steps like deregulating the banking sector, for instance, or floating the Australian dollar or tearing down tariff wars. Those great battles are over. We're now tinkering. But then again, look, you look at the Hawke Keating years, they stood back from the GST or the consumption tax. That took another, the Conservatives under John Howard to go down that path. And this election, we're actually having debates around tax that would have, some of the taxes that were developed under Hawke and Keating.
That's true. Let's go to this election. Michelle, Bill Shorten says Bob Hawke was the Labor movement's greatest son, and he told Labor's campaign launch 2 weeks ago, let's win it for Hawkey. Do you think the death of Bob Hawke on the eve of this campaign could have an impact on the result of this election?
I think that's really hard to say. Certainly it will remind people of a very positive period for Labor, and maybe that has some impact, particularly for older voters. But, of course, although we're talking a lot about Bob Hawke today, for many voters, that's a very different, faraway world. So I think the impact is really hard to measure.
All right. Well, it's the moment of truth. Before we get into discussing this campaign, I am going to ask you all who you think will win tomorrow. Karen, do you want to go first?
Oh, gee, I know thanks. You do. I think it will probably go to Labor. It may not be by very much, but it is an unusual election in the sense that even though the polls tell us that for a long time there's been an inclination towards changing the government, there's not the sense of a uniform national swing. This is an election that has been fought and will be won and lost in pockets around the country, as we've said, for weeks. And so it's going to be a fascinating night because there'll be some wild card results, I suspect. Some people who hang on that we expected might not, and some people whose seats on very strong margins might well go.
So, do you want to name any of those?
Well, I think Susan Lee in Farrer is in a lot of trouble with the independent Kevin Mack up against her. We've seen the Prime Minister going to campaign with her, and that's a seat of, what, I think 20% margin. So that would be extraordinary if that goes, and that's an example. I think Tony Abbott is in some trouble in Warringah. And so we are going to see some independence, I think. And, of course, in Cowper as well, Rob Oakeshott is also a good chance to get into Parliament.
I'll come back to the independence. But, Shane, you can't get out of it. Who do you think will win tomorrow?
Well, I live my life in numbers, so I have to follow what the numbers are saying, and it's a marginal Labor victory. I actually think it's more the difference between 69 and 72, those elections where there was a big swing at the 69 election, but Labor fell short and didn't have to do a huge amount to get through to 72.
Okay.
So think of 16 and 19 as sort of mirrors of 69, 72.
Michelle, I know you hate being put on the spot, but yet I will do it.
Well, I think that you'd certainly need belt and braces in talking about election results ahead of time. And mine would be on the basis of the polls. The polls are telling us at the moment that Labor is more likely to win, but it is a patchy scene and one never knows.
I'll tell you something else the polls tell us, and I put it to Tania Plibersek this time, and I think I've put it to her every time she's appeared during this election campaign, which is Labor's primary vote remains stuck around 33, and it is in the Ipsos poll today. When they lost the election in 2016, they had a primary vote of 35%. It's now at 33. I mean, Karen, can a major party win an election with a primary vote of 33?
Well, if they do, it rewrites all the rules, doesn't it? I remember the days when we saw parties' primary votes heading down towards 40 and people saying, oh, no, it's diabolical. And here we are talking about 33. That's a terribly low primary vote. There has been some jumping around in the polls on the primary vote. I think the last poll had it a little higher. So it's a bit unclear whether it is as low as that suggests. But either way, a primary vote, you know, in the mid to low 30s is terrible. And Labor Labor if it wins, but if it doesn't, needs to look at why that is and do something about it.
It raises the question, I suppose, of if we're headed for a hung parliament. But Shane, that aside, let's talk about the major messages, because Bill Shorten went into this campaign wanting it to be a referendum on wages, and I think the orthodoxy was that Labor had a strong case to paint that people were unhappy with the share of the sort of the economic pie they were getting, and the wages was a real sign of that. But the Prime Minister has campaigned relentlessly on Labor's tax cuts, what it calls its redistribution of wealth, and making the case that a lot of people are being done over by Labor. How do you think this campaign, this economic messaging in this campaign is working? Is it working for Scott Morrison or for Bill Shorten?
That's particularly dangerous when we're going to know the result of the question of that tomorrow. We've just been talking about, say...
Well, let me put it another way. Yeah. What kind of job do you think Scott Morrison has done in terms of, you know, demonising, if you like, Labor's tax policies, which have been out in the ether for 3 years at least, most of them?
Yeah, he's been very effective in mounting that argument. But then again, the Liberal Party primary vote, remember at the 2016 election, it collapsed as well, and it has fallen further. We've talked about Labor's primary vote. The Liberal primary vote is particularly low. We're talking multi-generational low as well. Going forward, the Prime Minister has mounted an absolutely strident attack on tax. But let's get beyond the next election. His tax agenda is tax cuts and nothing in terms of personal income tax. He hasn't got an agenda for reform in any other space. You can see the lacing of issues, of problems for future governments if you go down this path of saying nothing, no change to anything. But so it's been very effective, okay. Great messaging. However, he may have left himself problems for the future.
Okay, it's 27 past eight. We don't have much time left. Michelle, a new analysis from the Australia Institute today suggests Clive Palmer could very well end up with no seats in the lower house or the Senate. Now, that's not what people are expecting. He's spent $53 million at least on political advertising. Labor believes that's put kind of a wet blanket over their campaigning. What do you see as the impact of Clive Palmer in this election campaign on the chances of himself and also the Liberal Party?
He's obviously bought himself the best chance he can. I think it's impossible to know, of course, because it'll be a fight for the last seat, especially in notably in Queensland, and that can go every which way, really, with a number of these major parties. But it has raised big questions about money in politics, and I think that debate will go on afterwards.
And Karen Middleton, both parties now privately say there is a chance of a hung parliament, no doubt about that. And the Prime Minister last night was saying, well, if it's a hung parliament, then clearly people haven't voted for change, as Bill Shorten has been promising, so therefore you should stick with the government. But if it is a hung parliament, who do you think will be the kingmakers in that parliament? And who are they likely to play ball with?
Well, it's an interesting question, and we are going to see, I think, a swag of independence there in the House of Representatives. Well, we know that Rob Oakeshott, if he's there, he went with Labor last time, although it took him 17 minutes to tell us that. I think it's very difficult to tell. It's very difficult to tell. You'd have to assume that someone like I mentioned, Kevin Mack in Farah, is a conservative-leaning independent. Maybe that means he would go with the Liberals. We really haven't heard, and we're a bit of a away from those negotiations yet, I think.
Yeah, and the Liberal Party is thinking it can pick up Indi and Wentworth, which would mean two less independents on that crossbench. But, you know, there's no telling how things are going to play out. Shane, just finally from you, a hung parliament, how do you think that might turn out for either Bill Shorten or Scott Morrison, just briefly?
Look at the past history in that case, and it's exceedingly difficult for that party that forms government with the crossbench to survive.
All right, Michelle Grattan, Karen Middleton, Shane Wright, I really appreciate you joining us this morning after a pretty long and brutal 5-week campaign. Some have just judged it the nastiest ever, the dirtiest ever. I'm not sure what you think of that, but whatever. The polls open in less than 24 hours, and by this time tomorrow night, no, not this time tomorrow night, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, I'm pretty sure we'll know what's happening. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Michelle Grattan is Chief Political Correspondent with The Conversation and Professorial Fellow at the University of Canberra and one of our regular political commentators. Karen Middleton is the Saturday Paper's Chief Political Correspondent, and Shane Wright is Senior Economics Correspondent for The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald. And don't forget, if you want to follow all the election action tomorrow night, Raphael Epstein and myself and a panel of politicians and political experts will be bringing you every movement in this election campaign tomorrow night from 6 here on RN on local radio and news radio. We'd love you to join us.